Let's get ready to be radical!
Listening to the Radical Tea Party here on Enemy Combatant Radio, streaming to you live from the Mission every Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. And as usual, we have an excellent, amazing show lined up for you guys today. And in the studio with us right now, we have Shannon from the Prostitutes Rights Organization, and who also, by the way, doubles with her claim to fame as being one of the women arrested at Shannon Williams' protest last week. So she'll be talking to us a little bit about the organization, and then in a little while, Robin Few will be joining us, and she'll be able to relay her story of some different stuff that that she's been going through. And actually, we talked about Robin a little bit on the last show, so hopefully this will be familiar to some of our listeners. So we want to go ahead and welcome Stacy to the show. Hey,
Stacy. Thank
you
for having me.
No problem. So, sorry, I'm like a little frazzled. We have so many interviews lined up today on Enemy Combatant Radio, so hopefully people will stick around and keep it to this dial and check them out. But so tell me a little bit about the Prostitutes' Rights Organization.
Okay, we were founded by Robin Few. She is right now involved in a federal prostitution case. She has been charged with conspiracy to commit prostitution through use of a telephone. Because of the conspiracy aspect of the charge, apparently that makes it okay for the federal government to prosecute, even though there are no federal laws against prostitution.
Right. Now, that's interesting because I was under the impression that it was actually something to do with interstate trafficking.
Yes, it is. The fact that some of the girls who worked within an organization went to different states. That's what the evidence that they obtained was through the telephone. And so the actual charge says through the telephone.
So there wasn't like an interstate trafficking.
Interstate trafficking. Yes. That's also within the case.
So is that a formal charge at this point, or is that just,
it is a formal charge. The formal charge is conspiracy to commit prostitution by telephone.
Okay, but there's the interstate trafficking isn't actually part of the formal charge.
The interstate trafficking is part of the case and why it became a federal case.
Interesting. And
within the state, it would only be a state issue.
That is very interesting. And currently, how many of these women that were arrested with Robin or indicted with Robin have currently been sentenced?
Robin will have the exact numbers for you. There were something like 30 women involved in the investigation. Mm-hmm. How many actually had charges brought against them and are doing time right now, I'm not exactly sure, but Robin has that information.
Okay. And, I mean, basically, you can go ahead and clarify for me this for me. If you want, but what I have heard from, and this is through different friends and different sources, and a little bit talking to Robin the last time we did an interview, was that it all came about after a sex worker called the FBI and said that she had some concerns about a client of hers that was saying things that basically indicated that they could be planning to harm someone or harm a group of people, possibly through terrorist activities, whatever. But then the FBI then neglected to even investigate this particular case and then instead used the Patriot Act to get the telephone numbers of all these women and
yes.
tap their phones.
This is maybe the most disturbing part of this case. We have the Patriot Act and Patriot Act 2 and now potentially this Victory Act that is designed to supposedly protect us from terrorists. And when evidence was brought to the FBI for resources to actually investigate terrorists, they were more interested in getting information about the women who were involved in the prostitution exchange. And all of our tax money and the energy and resources that were used by our government agencies went toward investigating, arresting, and prosecuting these women rather than investigating actual terrorists who are a threat to Homeland Security.
That's amazing.
It's disturbing.
And, I mean, really, what are some of the motives behind, this really abuse of power and this abuse of information that you guys have kind of theorized? I mean, obviously everyone has their own hypotheses about why the government does what it does, but why target this particular group of women as opposed to, tips that they get every single day about people that are doing some pretty, horrible stuff?
It's hard for me to speculate on that. I didn't know any of the women. I met Robin after she had already been arrested and indicted. I think that our country right now, we're seeing a moralistic trend in policy, and really, we seem to be reverting back to some puritanistic values mm-hmm. that really aren't the American way, and really don't embody what our Constitution represents as, our freedom to express ourselves any way we choose and to pursue happiness. And I think that there is some deep-rooted fear of women's sexuality rooted in this legislation, and it's about control, ultimately.
Right. Right.
I think that John Ashcroft has been demonstrating some very fundamentalist attitudes after draping the Statue of Justice, which to me is so symbolic that he draped justice, and it was on the basis that female breasts were exposed. And then I was arrested 2 weeks ago when I protested topless outside of Shannon Williams' first hearing. I think that these parallels that are being drawn between women's bodies being illegal to expose, illegal for a woman to charge for her time and her services, I think that it's very degrading, and there is still in this legislation things that are reaffirming women as second-rate citizens. I really think that this is a women's rights issue.
Right. And I mean, there's many critics out there that would say that the actual degradation is prostitution in and of itself. But so many women, I think, are really saying that, this is a skill or craft or trade or any other part of the economy that, keeps this country, moving right along. And as such, as any other worker of the world, we demand our fair share, and we demand some compensation and also some protections underneath the law. And, to kind of bounce off what you had, about these speculations about why would the government choose to target women as opposed to terrorists? And I think that, a lot of things jump to mind, like this is perceived as being easier. There's also something in the power dynamics, perhaps, of being able to prey on a woman as, men that are typically in power, especially within the federal government. I mean, there's not a lot of people that speak out against harassment of women in this country, although, and this is even though, we have these kind of, like you said, these, undercurrents and histories of like, oh, women and children first, and women and children, that's the true non-combatant, and that's the true civilian casualty. And yet, in everyday life, so many women are still being persecuted on so many levels. And I'm just wondering if this organization has any views on that, or anything that you guys have been working on that...
It's very important for our organization to, one, be inclusive, because we are aware that not all prostitutes are women. But we also want to be clear that this war on prostitutes disproportionately affects women and their families. It was only very recently, maybe within the last 6 or 7 years, that the legal definition in this country of prostitution changed from any woman who accepts good or money in exchange for sex acts. It's been changed to any person. But the mentality behind that has not really evolved very much. Research that I've read points to that when women are, excuse me, when men do get arrested for prostitution, that they tend to be men who are dressed as women. They mm-hmm. are acting as a woman, somehow embodying feminine spirit, and that we see law enforcement focused on really suppressing that femininity and women's sexual energy.
Is it considered to be, I mean, what are the derogatory, conceptions that are like assigned to that? Is it because it's, it's just dirty? Is it weak? Is it, immoral? What are the different things that, especially for a man, I think there's that kind of connotation of like, well, that's totally weak, if you, to even dress as a woman.
Yes. I think, there's a concept that women do not have ownership over their own bodies. They're to make it illegal for us to say yes and accept money for sex. It's really depriving other women of the right to say no. And I think that men who you know, embody a feminine image, they tend to just be swept into that category, and possibly, like, even more strongly, they're treated even more strongly, like they've given up their rights over their own body because they've made the choice to be the quote-unquote weaker sex.
Right.
I think, not to become too abstract, but also I think that we have to take into consideration the concept of the shadow and how often individuals want to fight against what they see within themselves. And I think that there are huge amounts of homophobia and repression among police officers themselves.
Right.
And I think that anger and hatred becomes expressed through law enforcement based on things that people fear actually within themselves.
They want to be in control, you know.
Yes.
Like, that's, I always think about, I mean, I've been watching all these different films about different movements, and they always have, like, the requisite, you know, like, show of force shot where they show, like, all the police, and the camera, like, pans over them, and I'm looking at their faces behind these, like, stony expressions behind their helmets, and I'm thinking, you know, who are these people, you know, like, what, I wonder what made them want to become, you know, law enforcement officers in the first place. And I wonder, especially in small towns, like, you take something like the tree sit stuff that's going on in Humboldt, you know, and I mean, all those police officers are neighbors to people that are protesting. And it's like, so mm-hmm. where, you know, where's that common line, you know, and do many of them, are they in their boots going, this is just a facade, you know, this is just a total, you know.
It's a job. It pays their mortgages. I think also, when, I'm sorry, ask me another question. I just completely
just
lost,
like,
my train of thought.
Please. I don't want to talk about police anymore. Something I did, actually want to talk about is, you know, I wanted you to define, you know, what your, you know, idea of femininity was, because I think that a lot of women out there wish that they could find another term for how to express that, you know. It's like,
sure.
Is it, you know, is femininity the same thing? Is that equivalent with, or can it be parallel to female power? Or, you know, 'cause when you're saying, like, they're afraid of femininity, and it's, many women are saying, well, I don't want to be feminine, you know, like, I want to express my power. Whether it's through being a sex worker, whether it's through being something else, you know, I want to make sure that it's very obvious that, that I'm going away from the traditional stereotypes of what the female persona embodies.
Yeah, wow. Define femininity. That, I think that is a whole other, like, political struggle in itself. But when, in the context that I used it to describe, people who are biologically men and they want to invoke the image of women. That's what I said when they are, like, embodying femininity. It's right. In that context, it was the image of being feminine, the concept of girls wear dresses, girls wear makeup, girls have long hair. And I appreciate and respect the other struggle that's going on, but I'm not ready to take a stance on that yet.
So it's kind of, it's kind of just, you know, see, like, still feeling things out, or.
Yes, and I just remembered what I wanted to say about police officers. My closing
okay.
remark about that is that the message we'd like to get out to police officers is that we understand that they become police officers because they care about their community and they believe that they're being in service to their community. And what we want to do is help them truly be in service to the community and not have to waste their time prosecuting women and people who engage in consensual, paid-for sex. Mm-hmm. Minus rape and abuse, really all it is sex that's being paid for. And, like, that's what we
often
are
by police officers themselves.
Often by police officers themselves.
For example, the two Oakland vice police that were
yes,
caught soliciting.
San Leandro, I believe.
Or San Leandro, that's right.
So what we want to do is really define rape and abuse as rape and abuse, no matter who it happens to, and mm-hmm. and allow prostitutes to be able to seek protection if they are raped or abused in some way. And we want to stop prosecuting women who are consensually involved in prostitution, because it's wasting our resources, and it's taking away focus from police officers being to serve people who are truly in need. Right. And, you know, we want them to be able to carry out their goals. And really, I think my younger brother wants to be a police officer. And sometimes I think, oh, yuck, why would you want to do that? But then when you think about what's at the core of becoming a police officer, like minus all of the corruption that comes with moving through the department, like the bottom line is they're trying to help their communities and do good things for people. And I mm-hmm. think that their concept of what doing good things for people is can be very much misconstrued and manipulated once they're within the force.
Right. So, you know, talk a little bit about what are the current restrictions on prostitutes in terms of their rights and, you know, in terms of what they can be charged for.
Okay. You can be charged for agreeing to take money for sex, even
so just without in a conversation,
actually carrying
like...
out the act. And conspiracy, if you
that
are
That pretty much
aware,
puts all politicians, like, that pretty much puts all politicians, I think, in that category. I mean...
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting. Like, what is a prostitute? And really, it's the person who gets caught, you know, because so many different people are engaged in some different level of prostitution.
Right.
And yes, you can... Conspiracy, being aware that somebody else is making a profit from sex, you can be arrested for that, and you can be federally tried, which is what Robin Few is dealing with right now.
So being back that up. Being aware that someone is being paid to have sex?
Yes. Robin was not arrested for an actual sex act or for soliciting sex. She was arrested for being aware of an operation.
Really?
Yes.
So, and I mean, how does that work? Because she was the friend of a friend of a friend, or?
Yes, she'll be happy to tell you the specific details, but she was convicted of being aware that somebody was using a telephone line to bring, to
clients
coordinate
in.
Girls coming in from different states and working from, you know, where whatever location they had organized.
Wow. That's pretty... I'm aware of a lot of people like that. Oh, no.
Don't say that.
I know. I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say that on the air.
And then there are further things. For instance, your car can be forfeited if you are caught engaging in... Now, this tends to be more something that happens to the Johns. They may pick up somebody in their car and be engaged in a sex act, and if it's proven that that was a paid sex act, then the car can be forfeited, whether it belonged to the prostitute or to the client.
So, but this is something that it really only affects the client until after...
It depends on whose car it is.
No, but I think this is interesting, though, that what you said earlier about not even being engaged in a sex act, but just being aware of it, is predominantly used to target women, whereas, like you just pointed out now, that the Johns are the ones that typically, you know, take the heat in the instance of the car situation. But that... or for an actual sex act, you know?
Yes, and I also believe that the car forfeiture is not a statewide thing. It's a local ordinance, I think, in San Jose, whichever county San Jose is in. but essentially, statewide, it's, you know, just the act of exchanging sex for money or goods is,
wow,
is what the problem is.
Wow.
I think also something that's interesting is the places in Nevada are more than happy to take girls from any right. state. As long as you can prove that you're over 18, they will fly you out there. You can go to websites of several of the ranches there, and it will say straight
I've been
on
to
the
one.
Website,
they're very friendly.
Yes. You know, come on out. We'll fly you out from whatever state you're in. Yet, the justification for Robin's prosecution was that she was interstate trafficking through the telephone.
That's pretty insane.
So, you know, maybe online it's okay.
Oh my God.
Who knows? But so, there are lots of contradictions. Lots of contradictions that tend to favor men. You know, and...
Right, exactly. Especially since typically many of the men that are caught tend to be people that are in high profile positions. I mean, when you really think about it, yeah, right, exactly. You know, working men that you know have wives and children and families that they need to provide for really have to account for that $300 or $400 or whatever that disappears from their you know shared account or whatever. But so many of these politicians just have you know. All these many, many different resources and venues for money. And so it kind of, no one really notices when, you know, and then Absolutely. Until they get caught and then it's a, you know, a huge story and typically it's the prostitute that gets in trouble mm-hmm. or that's paid off to be quiet, you know, but it's,
sure.
it's just really, it's a circus, you know, it really is. And I think that the media is also very tied into how this whole operation works. You know.
Absolutely. The media, unfortunately, is involved in so many of the social injustices, or mm-hmm. maybe not involved in the social injustice, but they're contributing to maintenance of these injustices. And really, mm-hmm. Rather than being a tool of the people, they're being a barrier for the people to speak out about justice and make true change.
Right. Talk a little bit about... work that the organization has done in terms of, you know, research of prostitutes that basically slip between the cracks as a justification for legalizing prostitution in an attempt to get protective ordinances or laws that, you know, will protect prostitutes. You know, something that I don't ever really hear anyone talk about, really in particular the media, is how many prostitutes die every year or turn up missing or dead and no one cares, you know. And it's only when a woman is, you know, caught and, you know, fined or whatever and then thrown into jail for, you know, a couple of weeks and she's in and out of jail. And, you know, like, for example, in Shannon's case, it was only because she was a teacher that they really talked about it in her case. And she's like, hey, how many prostitutes die every year?
And you know what? The only reason that Shannon got into the media is because her arresting officers wanted to further taunt her and make her look bad and make her be exposed as a teacher who is a prostitute. Mm-hmm. So really the initial exposure was malicious from not necessarily from the media, but from the people who exposed it. And so what our organization has done is for every Shannon Williams hearing, we get out there with posters and several people, supporters, and we're drawing attention from the media, trying to put a good image out there of people who support teachers who have to turn to prostitution. Our message has been, you know, Oakland and Berkeley have laid off so many teachers in the last year. And why are we using money to harass women when we can be employing teachers and really doing the community a true service by educating the young and giving them resources to go out and work?
Right. So does there need to be education about this other side of prostitution women that...
Absolutely, there needs to be education. We want to educate the community, and we want to educate ourselves. Right now, we're a collective of passionate individuals who care about the issue, and we want to, you know, get ourselves up to date and very knowledgeable. So we have a weekly study group on Wednesday evenings. We get together, and we're studying the Australian laws because it has been decriminalized in mm-hmm. Australia, and they've got a very interesting model. And we're leaning more toward the model that they have than the model that Nevada has, which is still oppressive to women basically because of the zoning restrictions, and you have to be able to own the brothel in a certain place to make
right.
it, you know, it really, no, you have to have
that.
A lot
talk,
of money.
Talk about the difference between decriminalization and legality or...
Okay, well, decriminalization will take exchanging sex for money off of the list of crimes, period. Decriminalization does not involve specific taxation or specific regulations of any kind. Right now, we're more focused on decriminalization than anything else because right now our goal is to keep women from going to jail, to keep their lives and the lives of their families from being destroyed and disrupted. Legalization would involve regulation, taxing, lots
bookkeeping.
Of restrictions. Bookkeeping, yes. And bureaucracy, no doubt, as everything legal comes with. So right now we're pushing for decriminalization. We don't support taxing women's bodies in order to fund wars, which is what
right.
happens with everybody who pays tax, whether you work at Burger King or at a software company. That's where your tax money is going right now. So we're not supporting putting more money into that. we are supporting keeping women out of jail, keeping men out of jail, whether, you know, no matter who is playing the role of prostitute or trick, male or female, we don't want them serving time for pursuing and expressing their sexual freedom. And the Supreme Court just declared that sexual freedom is a legitimate aspect of liberty. And I think that this is, you know, this case is, you know, it's a case for the Supreme Court. If we have to take it that far, this is a constitutional matter.
Right. And is there a larger coalition of organizations such as yours that are kind of, you know, working on that, on making sure, on kind of trying to take it to the Supreme Court in some form?
What we'll see happen is right now Shannon's case is the biggest case that we're aware of in California. And she has chosen to plead not guilty, which we don't see happen a lot. So what will happen is her case will have to go through local courts. And, you know, there will be a ruling on that. If the ruling is not in her favor, she'll have to appeal to, I think, the Ninth Circuit of Appeals. That's here in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And if, again, the ruling is not in her favor, she can appeal to the state Supreme Court. Now, whatever the state Supreme Court rules, that will be the basis for the entire state. So if they ruled in her favor, then there is a California Supreme Court statement saying that it's not illegal to be a prostitute. If they rule not in her favor, she'll then have the opportunity to appeal to the United States Supreme Court. But then that's a process of hoping to be chosen and actually
right.
going through and getting the ruling. What we are hoping is that using the Lawrence versus Texas information and the ruling from that case, we're hoping that that will be a good enough constitutional argument, because if you
and this would be conjoined with Shannon's case as like a springboard, kind of.
Well, it will hopefully be,
if it makes it that far,
be like, you know, weighted evidence in court that says, look, the Supreme Court has said sexual freedom is a legitimate aspect of liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this falls within sexual freedom. And it's not a for sure defense, but it's hopefully, you know, every person should be able to use this Supreme Court ruling to defend
right.
any sex act that is consensual. And really, it's very important for people to understand the difference between consensual sex that is paid for and non-consensual sex, period.
Mm-hmm.
And what
do you think that people have, like, like really serious like discrepancies, like that they see that they, or that they don't see the discrepancies between that, or I mean, what?
I think that people don't see the discrepancies, and that affects us in several different ways. First of all, as you mentioned before, how many prostitutes die? How many prostitutes are raped, and how much of that is reported? Here in San Francisco, an ordinance has been passed where a prostitute can call San Francisco Police Department if she has been hurt, and she can make a report and say, you know, they want to know what were you doing there, why were you there, whatever. She can give full disclosure, and she will not face any charges.
How many other cities do that? I'm just curious.
None that I know of. Wow. None that I know of. And that's very valuable. It's important for
people terrifying
to consider that prostitutes are truly treated like, you know, not even second rate. They're like third or fourth rate beings on the social scale. And it's often ignored or considered okay when their bodies are abused or murdered or raped because they are not considered to have the same rights as we do, as other people do who are supposedly in more legitimate lines mm-hmm. of work or make more legitimate sex choices for themselves.
Right. So do you feel that it is a mentality of, well, you know, you consented to have sex with this guy, you know, you have to just take what you get, you know, you have to take the baggage that comes with that. Like if it, you know, it was your choice, like you have to be accountable for it. Do you feel like you run into that kind of mentality, like within police forces and the general public, you know, when these things come up?
I think that the needs of prostitutes just are not considered relevant. They're not treated like human beings. I think that when a prostitute is killed, for people who are not compassionate toward the issue, they are almost like roadkill. It's just another death on the side of the road that you drive past and don't think much about. And we want to change that. We want to end these stigmatized views against prostitutes because prostitutes are regular people who live with integrity, and there are so many different kinds of people from so many different economic levels and backgrounds and educational levels and backgrounds. Just so many examples of real human beings, and their lives are shrouded in secrecy, and they are anonymous because they live in fear of, you know, the sexual taboos that stigmatize them. They live in fear of punishment from law, and it's not. They're not able to come out, and it's been hard for us to form a coalition.
We're gonna take a quick break while Stacy answers her phone. And it's Robin, and yes, we'll be right back. I guess Robin actually wasn't able to make it at the beginning of the show today because her pretrial goings on. They basically called her in for a drug test today by surprise as part of her pretrial arrangements. So it's just another example of how this is, you know, totally being used, you know, against women in the sense that even, you know, even the pretrial arrangements and the kind of time period that leads up to a trial is a total disturbance to the normal activities of that person's life. So it's pretty insane how long this has actually been going on. And hopefully by the end of this month, Robin will have an idea of what her life will be looking like for the next couple of months. So we will be back in a second. And once again, you're listening to The Radical Tea Party, airing on Enemy Combatant Radio, here with you every Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. And this is... Wait. Actually, we're just going to go to some Ladytron. So Stick around. We'll be back in a second.